Hello and welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast. And joining me, it's of course Dave McKenzie. We are on our last ish day in Italy.
G'day. And
do you like how I sort of fixed that? Because we still have a little bit of Italy to come.
We do. We've got half a day to go. Well, not even half a day. We've got 60 kilometres, I think, because we are edging closer to the border. And then, of course, tomorrow we switch across. But beautiful day in Torino. And what a beautiful finish. I mean, we just have to celebrate it.
For many, many reasons. Because we're saying this Tour de France is a lot of first. The first back-to-back French win since 1968. And now, Berman Guermet winning his first stage at the Tour de France. He's, of course, won a stage at the Giro before. But the Tour de France is a big game. And Richard Carapaz, his first yellow jersey as well. A lot of the first. But let's talk about Guermet first.
Yeah. First Eritrean.
First ever Eritrean to win a stage at the Tour de France. I saw the fans were there in Troms yesterday. But what a win. What a way. What a very popular win, actually.
He's a superstar. He really is. And, you know, he's already proven that. He's proven that with his Gent-Wevelgem win. He's proven that with his stage in the Giro. But I love their post on social media. Him on the podium. No champagne will stop us.
Well, you know what? Because it's actual real champagne. In Italy, it wasn't real champagne.
Prosecco. and if you're not sure what we're talking about, remember he won his stage of the Giro and the cork went into his eye and he had to withdraw overnight. He did some serious damage. But
he could have lost his eye.
He was very lucky. So, but wow, how fortunes changed for him here in Torino. So you sort of recap them, but I'll just want to go again. DSM win stage one. Arkea wins stage two, Intermarché wins stage three. You could not have predicted that in a million years.
And also, 3 days, three yellow jerseys. Yeah. We'll talk about this in a second, but there's a lot of first, a lot of a new era where actually we thought it could actually be a stalemate, at least in the beginning of this Tour de France, because we said it and said it over and over again. That start was so hard that we could have thought they're going to pace it a little bit. I mean, the events are not pacing it.
No, they've gone for it. Look, today, what they did do today, though, I think all of the teams and most of the non-sprinting teams even sort of threw the towel in at the start and said, we're not going to win the day. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a sprint day. The sprinters, we talked about it from the start. We knew that with the whole hype about Cav trying to get the outright record. So
let's face it, it was a bit boring for a little while.
For sure. I mean, there was some beautiful scenery through the Barbadesque or the wine region. I must say, it's a pity we couldn't have stopped there and just had a little sip. But no, it was sort of what we expected. And then the big crash in the finale. Plenty of riders down. As we speak, still waiting to hear some confirmation on Philipsen.
Yeah.
I've heard he's gone down, but I don't know how bad he is. We saw Vanderpool had to do a bike change. So their day was a disaster.
That actually changed the game straight away. When Van der Poel had the flat tyre, changed the tyre, that changed the dynamics, and that changed a well-oiled machine that Alpecin can be.
Yeah.
So straight away, the other peloton got a little bit... Do you think the peloton actually got a little bit more stressed because, the regulars are not here?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder. I mean, there's plenty of things happened. For me, I've got a question mark on Philipsen's form, and he's not going bad. But he was the world's best. He's been the world's best sprinter the last 12 months.
And if I be a bit cheeky, he's not even the best Belgium sprinter at the minute.
Yeah, that's right. So I was questioning it based off the national champs where Arnaud Delis got the better of him and took that title. But what this does, it completely opens up now the sprint stages, in my opinion. It completely opens it up. The other teams will be licking their wounds in terms of not getting the victory tonight, the sprinters I'm talking about. But what they will be saying is, we're in the game. Yeah. We're in the game. I spoke to Matt Heyman, by the way, post-stage, and just a debrief on Dylan Groenewegen. He was fifth.
He got busted.
He ran out of room. Yeah. He said he ran out of room and he had loads left. So they're optimistic about Groenewegen. I'm sure there's a couple of others that'll be thinking the same.
Yeah, absolutely. So the day was for Berman Guermet. Let's listen to him.
Perfect. Yeah, amazing. You know, it's... until now, we don't have almost a bike rider shining on the big stages. But today, it's our moment to show our strengths and then our potential inside. So I'm super happy for myself, also for my continent, for my country. So that means super amazing, you know, especially going on the sprint in front of the fastest in the world. Yeah, it gives us a lot of the power behind the push, I think. Today, our team showed we can do the best lead out. Also, our plan is to give lead out for Gerben Nielsen. But yeah, I was behind him, so it's not easy always to follow the trail if you are the last guy. So I lose the team the last 1K, and from that one on, I heard in the radio to do for myself because I'm already lose the wheels. But yeah, for me it's always easier to find myself to be in a good position, and then from that one on it's always close your eyes and then go for the victory.
Birman Gürmey, I mean, what an amazing win. Again, we come back to this win, but he's not a natural sprinter, but he's very fast. He's very aggressive when it comes to a very dynamic sprint like it is.
He's just powerful. Yeah. When you see him up close, the first time I ever saw him, which I guess would have been at the Tour last year or a couple of years ago, he's just a really powerful looking guy. He's quite tall. He's he's not super, super solid, but
he's impressive. Solid.
Yeah, he's really impressive. And look, he's not a purist, but he's fast.
Yeah.
And he can box. He's the type of guy I think that can box on and box with the rest of them. You know, when you win somewhere like Gent-Wevelgem, you've got a bit of classics about you as well. So he is a really impressive rider.
And Intermarché Wanty-Gobert as well. Let's have a quick word about them. We sort of have had our chat about this team every year because we sort of are a little bit impressed. But let's remember that this team comes from pretty much a local club.
Yeah.
That went through the hoops and so on to become what they are now. And then what a success for them.
It is. You know, that's right. The origins of the team. A lot of people probably don't realize they've been around for a long time.
Yeah, but they
for
were a long club. Time,
they
were
yeah, and then they were club. Division two, yeah. And they were low division two.
Yeah.
And then obviously they got some funding and they got smart and they recruited the right riders. A lot of riders that were, you know, arguably on the way out towards the end of their careers, early 30s, but they didn't. They recruited the right ones. And they got some results. Mm. And it was at the Vuelta where it sort of started for them about three years ago. And ever since then, they've actually, you know, they've earned their place in the World Tour. And then, of course, Gourmet, won Gent-Wevelgem, Giro stage, and now Tour stage. And all of these wins, we talk about how it's been good. What I love is it's great for the economy of the sport.
Yeah.
I said it about Arkea. We need these teams to win. Because eventually their sponsors otherwise will get a bit sick and tired of outlaying, you know, 5-10 million euros.
Unless you're called Cofidis.
Unless you're called Cofidis, they're like, we're happy to wait 15 years, it's fine.
Now let's talk about Carapaz, first Equatorian to wear the yellow jersey. Let's recap just a little bit. Crashed on day one last year.
Yep, out.
Out,
yeah,
you know, with lots of ambition. He was already showing a lot of ambition on the stage yesterday, because remember we talked about Remco making the close on the leading group with Pogacar and Vingegaard. Well, the other rider with them was Carapaz, and today class act, because he knew from way back that he could get the yellow, but in the end we talked about it just before, crash, etc. All that has happened in that finish, Carapaz stayed clean, and in the end he's in yellow.
Unfinished business for Carapaz at the Tour. That's what I think. Really unfinished business. And like you said, off the back of last year and for the team, EF, they've been on the podium here previously with Rigoberto Urán. So they know how to get on the podium. You know, this isn't foreign land to them and it's not foreign territory. And Carapaz is a Grand Tour winner. He is emerging for me, and I know it's very early days, but he is emerging for me as a real dark horse in this race.
And before we do the full debrief for next stage tomorrow, but the way it's shaping as well, the big day that we will talk about in a minute, it means that we could potentially have another yellow jersey tomorrow if Carapaz is not sticking it with the Pogacar and the Vingegaard.
This has been the best opening, you know, 3 days that we could have asked for, I think. And you know, again, kudos to ASO. They took a gamble on three long stages, even though, there were patches of today that were boring. All in all, the way the results have panned out have been brilliant.
Hey, Maka, I think that's Stuart O'Grady, one of the legends of cycling here with us.
He plays it down, though. Stuart O'Grady, always good to see you at the Tour. You've been a busy man, I know that much. You're wearing a few different hats, but the hat I want to talk about, Tour Down Under, because you've just released the stages a few days ago. You always do it around the Tour time. It must get you doubly excited.
Absolutely, yeah. It's really exciting to get the announcement out, get all the stages out. It's all kind of been a little bit secrecy over the last few months. And, yeah, we try and launch at, an important time in the calendar where everyone's starting to get interested about the Tour de France. There's a little break beforehand. Most of the countries have got national championships on and kind of looking for a bit of news. So it's nice to be able to get our race out in, you know, into the public and into the World Tour's laps. And then I can come over and start having some conversations and a few coffees. And just like this, you go to a big bike race where you're going to bump into bike people. So, it's wearing a couple of hats, which is fantastic.
Do you learn much? Is there much to learn on a race like this for you as a race director? If you got your race director hat, the way it's organized, the way they scaled it up, I guess.
Yeah, of course. Every year there's little innovations. Yesterday, for example, Waze, who are one of the sponsors for the GPS tracking, but also the maps. They have a little QR code in the tech guide or the race manuals for the staff, for the VIPs to be able to get access in and out. It's all little things like that which you see. And you just have to, the Tour de France is the world's biggest bike race. You've got to see what they're doing and try and take some little ideas, if we can afford it, to our race back home. We've got a very different team size and probably a very different budget, but we do our best.
Now, let's talk race quickly. You rode for French teams throughout your career, amongst other squads, of course, but the French, they are killing it.
Yeah. Who's here to complain this? Yeah.
No, it's awesome. I'm super proud of Bardet and DSM. That was a fantastic win. You know, one of those rides just from the heart, pure instinct. He saw an opportunity and he took it. You know, he's announced his retirement for next year. Maybe this will inspire him to do one more tour, I don't know. But what a great achievement for Roman, jersey, stage. I mean, that's a lot of emotion there. Takes the pressure off the team. And then, Arkea coming out yesterday. I think the focus has been so heavily on Pogacar that everyone's almost kind of afraid to make a move. And with the heat and the difficulty, that had to be the hardest first stage I've ever seen in my career. Certainly pretty happy we're on this side of the fence now, Macca, because it'd be pretty unpleasant out there. But I just think, everyone's kind of just waiting for Pogacar, which opens up the door. If you're going to have a crack and you know you're probably not going to be a real GC threat to them in the third week, there's always an opportunity.
It's actually interesting what you said, because Bardet, when he won the stage in a French commentary, he said, "I had to release the pressure. I had to be myself. I'm happy I can be myself." Is that what we need in cycling now? Like, the guys are now looking too much at their heart monitor, right monitor, watt monitors and radio, and so it's becoming too mechanical. But at the end of the day, hearts always win.
I think to add to that is a lot of the big teams with the sponsors are really just happy to get in the top 10 come what normally Paris this year, it's Nice. For Bardet to try and hang in there and finish top 10 would have been important a few years ago. You know, he's been on the podium. Now the team have gone, okay, I think he as a person has probably been a bit more realistic and gone, I'm not capable of being there with these big guys. Just let me go and let me do my own thing. But I think he caught everyone off guard, but, just shows he's a pure talent and a pure racer.
French panache.
Exactement.
Merci, Stuart.
Okay, de rien. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that was Stuart O'Grady Macca. Let's take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll have a closer look at what's coming up tonight on SBS, straight after this.
Ready to take your cycling adventures to the next level? Since 1975, Jayco has been proudly manufacturing in Australia and is the largest name in caravans, pop-tops, camper trailers, hybrids, motorhomes and campervans. With the largest service network in Australia and unbeatable access to parts and accessories, Jayco is here for you. Cycle by day and relax by night with your fully equipped Jayco to keep you out of the elements. Jayco is built here for out there. Visit jayco.com.au to discover the range.
Get the ultimate Tour de France experience with SBS On Demand. Download the app on your preferred device or connected TV to access the Tour de France hub. Enjoy full live coverage, stage replays, extended highlights, mini stage recaps, and bite-sized stage winning moments. It's all available anytime, anywhere, and streaming for free at your home of cycling, SBS On Demand.
Here for the podcast, our Jayco and SBS podcast. I'm with, and I'm not mincing my word, probably the funniest man in this peloton. Very serious, but very funny as well, Matt Stevens. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Enjoying Torino. been here quite a lot over the years. This year as well at the Giro d'Italia. And I keep getting the Tour and the Giro mixed together because at the moment they're intertwined, aren't they? But no, it's great. It's hot and we have the first sprint day today. So there's a real anxiety building, I think, amongst everybody here.
Especially you with a British accent like this. There's someone from your neck of the wood that is likely or willing at least to do something exceptional on this Tour de France. How do you rate his chances so far in the 2024 edition? We've seen him a few days.
I've managed to speak to Mark every day in the mix zone. And he's somebody who increasingly, as the pressure seems to get higher and higher on him and the expectations higher. And I think if he does achieve the 35 wins, it'll be a monumental achievement that almost would transcend sport. But with that in mind, he just seems to be calmer and calmer. So today, he was almost serene. He was just relaxed, but very focused, almost in a zen-like state. And he was very expansive, generous with his answers. And we talked the other day, I asked him what has changed, because he's the only rider here that has sprinted in multiple generations at the Tour, you know, from 2008 to now. It's incredible, really, isn't it? I know we talk about it a lot, but you have to look at how sprinting has changed, and he's had to adapt. And sprinting is far more muscular now. He hasn't got quite the top end of the big sprinters here, but what he has is experience and craft. And importantly, one of the most trusted lead-out riders, Marko Morkov. So I think Morkov is the key to try and create space. But as each stage passes where the pressure gets bigger, for all the sprinters, not just Mark. It's not just about Mark, of course. But, wow, if he were to pull it off, it would be incredible. And I think even his rivals, if he wins, would celebrate with him. They all want to beat him. There's no gifts. There never is in sprinting. But I think if he does achieve it, it will be monumental. But, yeah, the one thing, my takeaway at the moment is that he suffered over the last couple of days, and that was a reminder for everybody that these sprinters arguably have it tougher than everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody suffers, but those guys are just fighting for the time limit. Mark looked like he was on the ropes. He wasn't sick, it was just the heat. But he's had a tough couple of days, and today will be the first indication of where he's at. I don't think it will be today. I think it might be deeper into the race, but you just never know with him.
It's interesting, actually, as a general chat, on see how one man can almost steal the history, or at least the storyline of this Tour de France. You get Bardet, first yellow jersey, but everyone is talking about Mark, you know, and even, well, maybe not the French press, but everywhere else, everyone is talking about Mark. We're talking about Mark. It needs to happen, if anything, for us to stop talking about it.
Yeah, I think we'll all be quite relieved. I mean, Project 35, when I speak to him, we have to mention it sometimes, but I try not to, because Project 35 will happen. This is just another race that he has to win. And I think the odds are increasingly against him. I think he accepts that in this modern sport. But he's had two wins this year, and that must be very encouraging. Imagine coming into the Tour with no wins. Yeah. But he has won twice, okay? But as everybody knows, this field is completely different. We have all the best sprinters here. But you're quite right. I think it just shows how amazing a feat it will be if he does achieve it, because it is history. I mean, the Tour de France is the biggest bike race in the world. It's the biggest, one of the biggest sporting events in the world outside the Olympic Games, and he will be the person that's won the most individual stages. It is monumental to beat Merckx. Okay, he already shares it, but to beat it, that's why there's so much chat, because it is so significant, and I think everybody wants him to do it, but it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard.
The start of the Tour, pretty tough. We've been saying with Micah, probably the toughest in our memory anyway, but maybe in almost human memory. I mean, we're not talking 1923 when they had 6 day stage, 6 time trials, you know, this sort of thing. But in a modern time cycling, this is amongst the toughest start of a Grand Tour we've ever seen.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the racing has been really hard. We've got already what looks like a week. The general classification looks like we've been racing for 7 days. It is incredible. So today is no surprise that the riders are taking it relatively easy. And also they had a long transfer this morning as well to get us from where we started in Florence to this point. There's obviously going to be a lot of transfers. So the racing has been hard. The terrain has been hard. Everybody has had to move a long way as well. So yeah, it's definitely the hardest start. But now it is a chance for the obviously very tired sprinters to shine. So it will show us not who's the fastest, but who's recovered the most as well.
Absolutely. Matt Stevens, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, that was Matt Stevens, of course, from Eurosport. Someone you rode with, I believe.
I did. He was a teammate, roomed with him. No, great guy, and good to get him on. Well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's have a look at the stage coming up on SBS tonight. Stage 4. We are finally, Maka, making it to France. Yes, I am happy. I've got energy. we are going to France.
Yes, okay. I think the whole TV compound actually are pretty happy.
We signed in for a Tour de France.
We do. No, we sign on to it. But our journey in Italia has been magnifico. It's been beautiful. It's been lovely. The food, of course, the coffee. But it is good to get to France. But unprecedented,
mm-hmm.
a proper mountain stage, just shy of 140 kilometres, 139.6, I think. This is a tough opening first week. We've said it all along. Here's the proof is in the pudding. Sestriere, famous climb. They go up that first, leaving from Pinerolo in Italy on the Italian side. Then they go Montgenèvre, which is another climb, that Briançon, into that famous city of Briançon, sort of ski town, if you like. And then Col du Galibier. At the top of the Galibier, 2,700 metres. This is one of the highest alpine mm-hmm. climbs. It's a 19-kilometre descent down into the finish into Valois. So this is a proper mountain stage, stage four.
Yeah, and you know what? Briançon is where I had probably my favourite tartare I had ever in the world, steak tartare.
Really?
Yeah, I remember
Gracie it. Alvin. Gracie huh? Alvin, who we're missing dearly.
Yes.
She loves a steak tartare.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I remember it, and it's a shame we're not stopping there, because I would have taken you there, and
he
would have
been... We might have. We'll get ahead of the race.
We'll see. Okay, a profile like this one is stage four. Who's got a name on it? And can I say, with the big descents that we have at the in the end of that stage, someone like Pidcock, if he's crossing close to the top, is it a sort of descent that could suit someone like taking risks like Pidcock?
Yeah, 100% it is. It all depends how hard they race up Galibier. Does Pogacar go on the attack? Does he test Vingegaard? Does Vingegaard test Pogacar? Are they going to play mind games and have a bit of a standoff? Does Roglic try and attack? Does someone take advantage of those two, you know, having a stalemate? I like that side of the story. I think that might happen. We might see Pogacar and Vingegaard have a bit of a standoff, and we might see someone else win because of that.
Absolutely. I think we have a theme where we end podcasts where the ambulances are coming. Yes,
second day in a row. Don't worry, folks. I think everything's okay. It's fine.
It's kind of the alarm bell for say, wrap it up, Christoph. Wrap it up.
Yep.
Thank you, Maka, for joining us again on the JCO SBS podcast. It's all going to be to play for right here live on SBS. And of course, we'll be here in your ears to debrief it tomorrow morning. Thank you, Maka.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the JCO and SBS Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by JCO, your great escape.